calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
So what is really going on in Iraq? What is reality? Here we have Bob Woodward coming out saying, first of all, that the Bush administration, that Condi Rice was warned in July that bin Laden was determined to strike in the United States, just like Bush was warned in August, and they decided to ignore it. Interesting. But beyond that, that the Bush administration has been aggressively lying to us about how things are going in Iraq. Ali Khan Velshi and Cliff May of the the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a conservative organization heavily funded, $400,000 last year by the Sarah Scaife Foundation, one of the more aggressive funders of right-wing think tanks, has published in the American Spectator a piece, Myths of War, the 10 Most Widely Believed Distortions About the Global Conflict Now Underway. Ali Khan, am I pronouncing your name right?
That's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Ali Khan, it seems to me that you guys are trying to rewrite history in a really significant way here. Myth number 8, President Bush lied about Iraq posing an imminent threat to the United States. Are you saying he didn't say that, or are you saying that Iraq did pose an imminent threat to the United States?
I'm saying neither. I'm saying that President Bush never said Iraq posed an imminent threat. And secondly, Iraq did not pose an imminent threat. It was the Democrats, if I may be frank, who wanted to make imminence the necessary precondition for going to war. And the Bush administration and the Senate resolution authorizing the use of force rejected imminence. So it's people who are after the fact rewriting history and saying that, oh, well, Saddam Hussein didn't pose an imminent threat. That wasn't the reason we went to war in the first place.
So when George W. Bush said,
first I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. Now there are many dangers in the world. The threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place. Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Are you telling me that he didn't say that?
I'm saying he said that. I'm saying that the whole point of that speech, when you listen to it, is he's saying we can't wait until the minute before they launch the weapon, before we attack them. He's saying we can't wait until the threat is imminent before we attack them. We have to go after them in an anticipatory fashion, way before the threat is imminent.
It sounds to me like he's being pretty specific that there's an actual imminent threat. In fact, he even says that they're targeting the United States. Here again, George W. Bush.
We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles that could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas. We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States.
And you say he's not telling us that there's an imminent threat?
Are you disagreeing that Iraq had previously launched attacks against the United States, such as the 1993 World Trade Center attack? All he's confirming...
Yes, Iraq had nothing to do with the 1993 Trade Center.
Are you kidding me? The people who traveled to the United States to carry out that attack were traveling on Iraqi passports. The people who carried out that attack, such as Mr. Abdul Yassin, then fled to Iraq and were given sanctuary in Iraq.
And they're in prison in the United States right now.
No, Mr. Abdul Yassin is not in prison in the United States. He remained in Iraq until the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. Iraq was, for example, funding suicide bombers to the tune of $25,000 to the families of suicide bombers for $25,000, who were then killing...
Hang on just a second. Let's go back to the 93 attack on the World Trade Center.
Sure.
What the blind shake. I mean, my understanding was that this was basically an early al-Qaeda operation before we even realized in 96 this is the argument that's being made by the Republicans that Clinton missed a chance to get al-Qaeda because al-Qaeda was behind this. Now you're saying Saddam Hussein was behind it? Or are you saying that because there was some Iraq affiliation that therefore we should have attacked them?
I'm saying that Well, first of all, Al-Qaeda wasn't constituted as a group at that time.
Right.
But the terrorists who were involved in that...
They were carrying Iraqi passports.
Right.
Okay. Now, 14 of the 19 hijackers who hit the World Trade Center were carrying Saudi passports. Should we, therefore, have attacked Saudi Arabia?
No, because they weren't envoys of the Saudi Arabian state.
How do you know?
That's the distinction.
How do you know? All the Saudis who were in the United States, who were you know, the high-level Saudis, were flown out of the United States and not interrogated by the FBI in the days after 9/11.
Well,
there has never been a serious inquiry. The Saudi government to this day has refused to allow the FBI to come into Saudi Arabia and interrogate people. We have no idea.
That's frankly a left-wing conspiracy theory, if you want my opinion.
That's in the 9/11 Commission report.
It was not. No, you're completely distorting the 9/11 Commission report. See, you know what most liberals do is they hold up the 9/11 Commission report and they say, well, our crazy left-wing theories are in this 9/11 Commission report, when the opposite is in fact the truth.
We're talking with Alekhine Velshi, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, defenddemocracy.org. What you're saying is because these guys had Iraqi passports, therefore we should invade that nation. If we were to follow that kind of logic, anytime anybody commits a crime against the United States or an attack on the United States by virtue of the passport that they hold or the country that they came out of. I mean, these guys, a lot of the 9/11 hijackers actually put this thing together in Germany. Should we be attacking Germany?
Look, the evidence of Iraq's complicity in 1993 isn't the only reason we went after Iraq. It was also their genocide against the Kurds, their repeated aggression against their neighbors. There were a variety of reasons why Iraq was the number one rogue state in the world. And so you can't just focus on that one thing and saying that was the only reason.
Wait a minute. You have Pakistan, where you have an elected government overthrown by a military dictator who now has nuclear weapons. You have North Korea, where they're building nuclear weapons now as a consequence of George Bush bellicose rhetoric. You have the Zimbabwe, where Robert Mugabe has murdered 2 million of his own civilians. You have Burma, where it's a police state that would make George Orwell blush.
Right. The difference between you and I is that I support taking action, not necessarily military, but certainly in North Korea's case, I do support military, but to deal with those circumstances. What's happening in Burma and Zimbabwe?
This brings us to the core of the issue then, Alekhine Velshi. You're suggesting that the way to deal with a state that is behaving in a way that we disagree with, a tyrannical dictator, for example, is to go in and bomb their country and take it over.
As a last resort, I think in the case of Iraq, diplomatic solutions failed.
Tell me one case where we preemptively attacked a country and bombed them into democracy successfully in the last 200 years?
Well, my mother is from Uganda, and she was forced to flee the Idi Amin dictatorship. And it was a preemptive war that was launched against Idi Amin by Tanzania to force that country back into democracy.
I was there in 1980. I was there in Uganda in 1980. It's a great example. And the Tanzanians came in to drive Idi Amin out because he was representing a threat to Tanzania as well. But there was a consensus among the countries of the area. And you know, the fine thing that they did, but it didn't immediately lead to democracy. In fact, right now, once again, Uganda, and you know, I have friends who are there today. I've been back there several times. Uganda is sliding back into autocracy.
That's nonsense. Many of my family have since moved back. Indians have moved back, and there is no threat that they're going to be expelled or, you know, tossed into the rivers to be fed to crocodiles, as it happened under Idi Amin. You know, I dislike the Ugandan regime as much as other people.
So then you agree with me that it's not a democratic.
They're not sliding back.
They're not as obviously not as bad as Idi Amin.
The factual predicate for your question was that it was impossible to launch military strikes against a country and turn them into a democracy. And I gave you the example of Uganda, where that precisely happened.
By a neighboring country. Where in the world have we been able to bomb a distant country into democracy?
Well, we've never tried before.
So this is our grand experiment.
Well, I wouldn't call it a grand experiment. I'd call it a war of necessity. But it does have certain consequences in terms of if it works, and you know, the jury is still out. It did take many years to, say, rebuild Germany or Japan into democracies. Then it's something.
But they attacked us first. Germany declared war on us before we declared war on them.
Germany did not attack us. They declared war.
Germany officially declared war
against
us before we attacked.
And Japan did not attack the continental United States. They attacked a military asset.
Pearl Harbor is the United States.
It's a military asset, whereas Iraq, for example, attacked an actual U.S. civilian asset. So you know, once again, there you have the circumstances where, in fact, Iraq had attacked us more than Japan had in its day.
So you're suggesting that because one of the guys who was involved in the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center. Two of the guys had Iraqi passports and one of them ended up back in Iraq. That because of that, then 10 years later, we were justified in going in and attacking Iraq.
That
imminent threat against the United States was so great that we had to sacrifice 2,700 American soldiers, cause another 20,000 to lose a leg, an eye, an arm, and kill 100,000 civilians. It was that great.
Well, first of all, imminent.
How can you sleep at
night? And secondly, the 1993 bombings is one of many reasons. I said this genocide against the Kurds. It's fiddling with the nuclear non-proliferation treaty. It's aggressive.
So you think we should take out Somalia as well?
In fact, I was in Somalia just a few months ago in March, and I don't think we should take them out because they don't pose a threat to us.
No, but they talk about gassing the Kurds. Look at what they're doing in Darfur.
Somalia is not involved in Darfur. You're talking about Sudan.
Sudan, I'm sorry, you're right. Okay. Ali Khan Velshi, defenddemocracy.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
No pun on Foley.
I'm not gonna shut my eyes till I go down.
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America. I tell you, the mainstream media is going to be going nuts on this thing with Foley. And with some justification. I mean, the guy was a predator, but they're going to spin it in two ways. And he was a predator. He deserves to be out of the United States Congress. And if he committed a crime, he deserves to be prosecuted for it. I mean, you need to be on the record about that. But here's how I see this thing playing out. And this is the take that you're not going to hear in the mainstream media. That the mainstream media is going to use the Foley scandal, because it's a sex scandal. They love sex scandals, because they're going to use that Foley scandal, and the Republicans are going to use it. You're going to hear Republicans out there huffing and puffing, again, no pun intended, on this thing. Because they don't want there to be a discussion of the fact that Condi Rice was told on July 10th by George Tenet that he wanted to have an emergency meeting with George Bush because Al-Qaeda was coming to get us, because 9/11 was going to happen, and Condi Rice blew him off. Boy, it's so hard to avoid double entendres today. So this is, you know, July 10th. And not only that, apparently Tony Blair was even lied to. This also from Bob Woodward's new book. This in today's Daily Mail. Tony Blair pleaded in vain with George Bush to share vital combat intelligence about the Iraq War. With Bush locked in a desperate battle to win re-election in 2004, they were more interested in hiding the truth about the failures to thwart the 9/11 attacks. You get that? The Bush administration in 2004, in the run-up to the election, was so interested in hiding the fact that they failed to prevent 9/11, that they lied to Tony Bush. Woodward says, this is from the Daily Mail of London, Woodward says that top Pentagon officials took the decision to deny Britain access to it. This is this secret internet router protocol, SpiritNet, which the Pentagon used to store and communicate years of potentially embarrassing intelligence. The classified information had a caveat, no foreign, meaning no foreigners were allowed access, a restriction that included even the British troops fighting alongside Americans in Iraq, Woodward writes. In July 2004, Bush assured Blair he had signed a directive saying the no foreign rule would no longer apply to Britain, but the book says the Pentagon ignored it, hatching a scheme to hoax the British into believing they were being kept fully informed. So the cons are going to spin this. See, here's the first thing. Okay, they get the word, what, 4 days ago, 5 days ago? I mean, you know, Woodward's book is at the printer. The Republicans get a copy of it. In fact, the galleys were probably out a week or two ago. So they get a copy of it, and they see, hey, Woodward's book is going to say that Bush was warned on July 10th that 9/11 was coming. He was warned again on August 6th with a presidential daily briefing. In fact, the CIA flew a guy down to Crawford, Texas to tell him, and he ignored both those warnings, did absolutely nothing. Clinton, at least, was having weekly meetings on this and tried on three different occasions to kill bin Laden. Bush did absolutely nothing for 9 months, or eight months and change. And the Republicans say, this is terrible news. So what happens? First, the Rupert Murdoch-owned London Times on Saturday night, Sunday morning, leaks a video which has been in the possession of the U.S. government for 4 years now of Mohammed Atta and another one of the hijackers going, ha, 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 look at this. This is a great time. We're gonna attack America. And by the way, the video was taken in 2000 during the Clinton presidency. So number one, they tried to change the conversation back to Bill Clinton and his failures by releasing this thing, the Rupert Murdoch-owned London Times. And that was going to be the Republican spin. That was their little trick to divert our attention from it. And sure enough, that was the lead story. 6 o'clock Sunday morning, I was in the Los Angeles airport getting ready to get on a plane back here to Portland. And CNN News was on in the red carpet club there at the airline that I was at. And boom, right there, first story. Here's video of Mohammed Atta from 2000 when Bill Clinton was president talking about 9/11. But then this Foley thing came along. And so the Republicans decided, okay, we can push this even harder and get it on the front page. It's about sex. And ensure that nobody is talking about the fact that Bush could have stopped 9/11 and failed to. And maybe even intentionally failed to. And so now you've got Newt Gingrich out there saying, oh, well, we knew about this, but we didn't want to talk about it because that would have been gay bashing. Say what? This is not about gay. This is about underage kids. But the Republicans are going to try and re-spin this as, we didn't want to embarrass a gay member of the House. You see, we're very sensitive. But we are trying to do something about this. And this is a serious issue. We're working on this. And just so long as you don't talk about Bush's failure on, you know, then you can talk about Foley all day long. Hey, right now it's time for the Tom Hartman Program's Progressive Pop Quiz. Today's question is, on July 10th, CIA Director George Tenet told Condi Rice what? Sixth caller with the correct answer at 1-866-440-8466 gets an autographed copy of my new book, Screwed, 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I heard a voice. I thought it was God. It said,
You're wrong, man, and your system is wrong.
It was so scary. I was so terrified.
That morning I decided it was time to change sides.
I'm a Republican now. Party elect. I'm a Republican now.
I got red on my neck.
I'm a Republican now.
We ain't having no sex.
I'm holier than now. I'm a Republican now.
Yes. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Congratulations to the winner for today's Progressive Pop Quiz here on the Tom Hartman Program. Our question on July 10th, CIA Director George Tenet. So this is what the mainstream media does. This is what the Republican Party desperately does not want discussed. They want fully discussed. This is what they desperately don't want discussed. On July 10th, CIA Director George Tenet told Condi Rice what? And congratulations to Andy Lord from Eugene, Oregon. Indeed, Andy knew that the correct answer is that Al-Qaeda was going to attack the United States, or any variation thereof. Congratulations, Andy. And so let me just wrap up this Foley thing, because, as I said, in my mind, the Fox News, the Republicans, the whole bunch of them, now that their initial attempt to blow this fact that George Tenet said to Condi Rice on July 10th, hey, look out, Al-Qaeda is going to come attack us, to blow that off the front pages. Their initial attempt Rupert Murdoch leaking to his newspaper, the London Times, or I don't know if he did it, but, you know, this leak to the Murdoch-owned London Times of a video of Mohammed Atta. That was the first attempt. Now they've got something even juicier. They got Tom Foley. The Republicans, I mean, you know, yeah, they're going to, one of their own is going to go, he's going to vanish. He's going to go down. He's toast. He's already resigned. But they're going to keep this conversation going. I guarantee it. The Republicans are going to keep this conversation going until the conversation about what happened on July 10th goes away. The other thing that the Republicans are going to do with this is they're going to use this as an opportunity. In some ways, there are some Republicans, like Newt Gingrich, who see this as a gift from heaven, what happened with Tom Foley, because it allows them, just like our guest in the first hour tried to conflate Iraq and 9/11, this allows them to, this Tom Foley, this whole thing with Foley, or Mark Foley, is it Mark Foley? The congressman, yeah, I keep saying Tom Foley. Tom Foley is the old congressman or something from the Pacific Northwest, former governor or something. In any case, this Mark Foley thing, it allows them to conflate homosexuality and pedophilia. And the fact of the matter is that most pedophiles are actually straight. And the percentage of pedophiles in the straight population and the gay population is probably about the same, and it's a very small percentage. And pedophilia and homosexuality have nothing to do with each other whatsoever. But the cons see an opportunity here to conflate the two so that they can further their be afraid of gays, be very afraid agenda. For example, here's Newt Gingrich on Fox News Sunday.
During all those months, they left Foley in the House Republican leadership. They left him as the head of the Congressional Caucus dealing with exploited children. No second thoughts about that?
Well, you could have second thoughts about it, but I think had they overly aggressively reacted to the initial round, they would also have been accused of gay bashing. I mean, the original notes had no sexual innuendo, and the parents did not want any action taken.
Well, how would it have been gay bashing?
Because it was a male-male relationship. And there was no proof, there was nothing that I know of in that initial round that would have led you to say, in a normal circumstance, that this is a predatory person.
So we're talking about pedophilia here, but all of a sudden it's gay bashing. There's your Republican talking point for the day. Anything to not talk about the fact that on July 10th, according to Bob Woodward's new book, and last night on 60 Minutes, he came right out and said it, that on July 10th, Condi Rice was informed by the director of the CIA and by Richard Clark, who was in the meeting as well, by the way, that Al-Qaeda was coming to attack the United States and we should do something about it. And had Condi Rice at that point done what Bill Clinton did back in 1998 when he got a memo that said Al-Qaeda was coming into the United States, and he immediately got the FBI and the CIA talking to each other. He immediately started regular meetings in the White House at the cabinet level about this issue. He immediately sealed up the ports of New York, the three airports in the New York area, increased security, notified the airlines, notified the folks, the private companies at that time that were doing airport security. He put the word out. He got everybody on it. Had Condi and George done that in July of 2001, had they gone to the FBI and said, what do you have on this? Hey, anything going on here? And the FBI had shaken that tree a little bit, then Colleen Rowley would have fallen out saying, hey, we've got this guy up in Wisconsin who's trying to learn how to fly a plane but doesn't care how to land it. And they would have gotten the memo from Arizona about the flight school, and they might have learned about the flight school down in Jeb Bush's state down there in Florida, and the whole thing could have gotten unraveled, and 9/11 could have gotten stopped. I mean, there's just an abundance of evidence of this. But the last thing on earth that the Republicans want you talking about, or that they want the mainstream media talking about, is the fact that 9/11 could have been stopped by George Bush if Condi Rice had not ignored George Tenet's plea and Dick Clark's hysterical, hair-on-fire demand that they do something. Instead, Bush put Dick Cheney in charge of his counterterrorism task force, and what did Dick Cheney do? Nothing. He met with Ken Lay for his energy task force.
How many billions of dollars would you like for Enron this year, Mr. Lay? We got to figure out a way to have a war in Iraq so that Halliburton can start making money.
Keep in mind, Halliburton was losing money in 2000. When George W. Bush was installed as president of the United States by the Supreme Court, Halliburton was losing money. Cheney's stock was losing money. Halliburton now is mind-bogglingly profitable. Well, as Jeb Bush pointed out in 1998, they did need a Pearl Harbor-like event. Is it possible? Is it even conceivable? I guarantee you, the mainstream media will not be talking about this, that George W. Bush purposely, that the Bush administration, right across the board, George and Condi and Cheney, purposely ignored all of these warnings and demoted Richard Clark because they wanted there to be a hit on the United States. They probably didn't expect it to be as big and as horrific as it was. They probably thought that it was going to be like the Reichstag fire, you know, start some building on fire or something. But it could it be that they actually wanted this so that they would have an excuse to invade Iraq? I mean, that's the discussion that we should be having in the media right now. And instead, I guarantee you right now, Republicans are offering other Republicans like Newt Gingrich to go on programs like Fox News Sunday and talk about this issue. I mean, here's Soledad O'Brien on CNN talking to Tony Snow. Is she asking him, why did the president not do anything about that July 10th meeting where Condi Rice was informed that Al-Qaeda was coming? No, that's not what she asked him. This is what she asked him.
Whoa, over friendly, any communication between a 16-year-old and a congressman, why doesn't that raise red flags? Major, massive red flags.
Yeah, look, I hate to tell you, but it's not always pretty up there on Capitol Hill, and there have been other scandals, as you know, that have been more than simply naughty emails.
Oh yeah, let's try and refer this to if we're not going to use it as an excuse to conflate pedophilia with homosexuality like Gingrich did, then we'll use it as an excuse to conflate a sex scandal with Bill Clinton. But don't talk about that July 10th meeting. Don't you dare talk about that. We can't do that. Dan Bartlett is out there. I'm volunteering to go on the media. Yeah.
One final quick question on this Mark Foley situation in the House. Number one, was the president aware of any of these allegations? Number two, the Washington Post is calling for an independent investigation. Do you think that's appropriate?
The president was not aware of this. It is a shocking revelation to see this type of allegation. The members of the House of Representatives, of the leadership, appear to be very aggressive in pursuing this investigation, and I think that's the best places for the leadership to determine the way forward.
So Dan Bartlett, he's out there. He's saying, I'm available to talk about this. I'll talk about this. And here, Britt Hume. Oh, yeah, let's use this as an excuse to beat up on Bill Clinton.
Inappropriate behavior towards subordinates didn't cost Gary Studs his Democratic seat in Massachusetts, nor Barney Frank his. Nor did inappropriate behavior toward a subordinate even cost Bill Clinton his standing within the Democratic Party.
None of them are going after minors, Brett Hume!
Even though indirectly, at least, he was impeached for it. Mark Foley found out about this, was found out to have done this, and he's out of office and in total disgrace in his party.
Yeah, well, it might have to do with something, you know, it might have something to do with the fact that it had to do with children. But, see, the Republicans aren't going to talk about that. But they are willing to talk about this. They're all over the media. Why? Because they don't want to talk about what happened on July 10th. They don't want to talk about what happened on August 6th. They don't want to talk about George W. Bush being notified in advance that 9/11 was coming. They don't want to talk about the fact that Bush had decided the week that he came into office, according to his Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, that he was going to have a war in Iraq, and then later on, lied about it when he said...
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Yeah, I'm a decider, don't you know? I mean, I hear the voices. Yeah.
So I hear the voices, and I read the front page, and I know the speculation, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
Yeah, see, this is what we need to be talking about. Rama in Williamstown, Vermont. Hey, Rama, we've got... Rama, in fact, I'm going to put you on hold because we've only got 10 seconds here before we've got to take a break if I'm reading my clock right. So, Rama, I pushed the wrong button and dropped you. Call back, please. But this is the issue that we need to be talking about. I mean, this is absolutely the issue that we need to be talking about. I'm telling you. The July 10th meeting that George Tenet tried to have, well, it did have with Condi Rice, tried to have with George W. Bush, and Condi Rice, you know, blew him off. Said, no, you know, it's not a big deal. But there's an attack coming. Oh, gee, well, maybe that'll be just what we need, because we need an excuse to invade Iraq. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour. Oh, crank that up.
It's in my blood and in my bones. By the dawn's early light, by all I know is right, we're gonna reach what we have shown.
Oh, man. 9 minutes before the hour, Jackson Browne there. One of the greatest artists of our times. Welcome back. Listener-supported radio here, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 9 minutes before the hour. You can support this program by letting your local radio station know that you are listening and thanking them, and also supporting the sponsors that you hear on your local radio station. Local sponsors, very important to the survival of Progressive Talk Radio. And our national sponsors, Sacred Grounds Coffee, for example, saving the planet one cup at a time. They're number 1-800-425-2532. Their website, sacredgroundscoffee.com. The Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, 888-ECOWINE. And Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods now, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, smalldog.com, their website. So let's try Rama again now that we have where did Rama go? Here he is on line six. Hey, Rama.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Rama?
Hey, what is this about the director of Central Intelligence having a message to the President of the United States that the country is in imminent danger of an attack by an outside force, and he has to kind of go to some underling to beg to get an audience? I mean,
right, and then she turns him down, and the President goes on a six-week vacation, the longest vacation in the history of the presidency since George Washington became president. I mean, and Washington never took a vacation like that either, and it's almost like he's just taking time off and waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. Well, Tom, I agree with you, and this is something I know my wife Grace and I have over the years agreed on. We've just disagreed on some of the details, but
On GER radio?
On GER radio, and even in our personal lives. I mean, it's obvious that they knew something was coming, and it's obvious that rather than go out and shake the trees, that they decided to go on vacation and wait and see what happened. And it's obvious that Bush and his administration, and I really think it's actually the Cheney-Rumsfeld administration, but that's just me. But it's obvious that they wanted an excuse to go after Iraq and that they were waiting for something to happen so that they could blame it on Iraq and say, well, here's our reason for going for Hussein. But, you know, I got to hold people lower down the line responsible, too, because no dictator or no president of the United States functions in a vacuum. They depend on countless folks underneath them. And if these folks enable the worst in these folks, such as Joseph Stalin's enablers or George Bush's enablers, take your pick, and they are just as guilty. And George Tenet should have been pounding on the Oval Office door, or forget about pounding. He should have turned a knob and walked in there and said, Mr. President, the nation's under danger of attack. If you don't want to get up and do something about it, I'll go explain to the people that this is so.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Rama.
Yeah.
But instead he got the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah. So,
which again causes me to think that ultimately what happened was exactly what George wanted to happen. You know me well enough, for those listeners who don't know, Rama was the first producer of this program 4 years ago. You know me well enough to know that I don't easily go to conspiracy theory, but this just stinks to high heaven. Rama, thanks for the call and your long friendship and support for the program.
You bet.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-440-8466, our number. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jim.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. Hey, looks like, I think the Spin Brigade is out on a full court press with this thing. Excuse the mixed metaphor, but, you know, it's the old pee and shell act again.
Yeah.
Keep your eye on the P.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, and if the P being, in this case, Mark Foley.
Right.
So that we don't talk about what happened on July 10th, and we don't have to talk about what happened on August 6th,
yeah.
And we don't talk about the fact that Bill Clinton last week, you noticed all the coverage. I mean, even the non-Fox coverage
right.
was about Bill Clinton throwing a hissy fit, not about the fact that Bill Clinton pointed out that for 8 months, the Bush administration did nothing
yeah.
to stop bin Laden when they had an abundance of information and could have stopped him.
Right. But I think Secretary Rice may have boxed herself a bit in the corner here. If you cast your mind back to the 9/11 Commission hearings, I remember making notes of watching her testify, and when she was asked about the presidential daily briefing of August 6th, bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., she said, well, we view that as essentially historical in nature. That was her way of dodging the bullet, historical, and because the title does not have the word is or was. Bin Laden
right.
was determined to say it's ambiguous.
Yeah, in fact, here's what led up to it.
The president was aware that there were issues inside the United States. He talked to people about this. But I don't remember the Al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6th PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Yeah. And that's essentially what she got on July 10th, too. And then she went and as you say, Jim, dissembled, shall we say, or perhaps lied to the 9/11 Commission, which in and of itself, I believe, is a crime. I believe Condi was put under oath. I know George and Dick were not put under oath. They would not testify under oath, and they had all these preconditions. They had to sit together. Whenever George talked, Dick was not allowed to drink water, you know, stuff like that. Apparently, George Tenet, if Bob Woodward is right, and this is what Congress should be holding hearings on. I mean, you're looking into Mark Foley, fine, but this is what Congress should be holding hearings on. Was Bob Woodward right? 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, they're in full court press, full tilt boogie. Don't you dare talk about the fact that we let 9/11 happen. No, the Republicans don't want that at all. You know, it's amazing how extraordinarily competent, I'd say, basically since Newt Gingrich got into power. He was the guy who really was the spearhead for this. Newt Gingrich and Frank Luntz. This whole thing of, it was Lee Atwater during the Reagan presidency who came up with the idea of playing what he referred to as playing the refs, play the media. You know, argue to the media that, hey, you're being unfair to us. And then you had Cliff May and the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies come out, you know, with SCAFE money. And you had the Heritage Foundation with money from SCAFE and from Joe Coors. And you had money from and the Hoover Institution. All these think tanks come out. And, you know, and everybody getting hysterical every time there was an article in the media that they didn't like. They would call it liberal just because they didn't like it. Welcome back to the program, by the way. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Over and over and over again, what we have seen, and it's reached an Orwellian stage in the Bush administration. I really think that at some point they sat down and said, let's just push this envelope and see how far we can push this thing. Can we take it as far as, for example, Khrushchev did? Actually, Stalin. Khrushchev followed Stalin. It was Stalin who really... Can we push this envelope that far of accusing others of what we're doing, of accusing the press of being the handmaidens of the enemy so that we can control the press and we can terrify the press? I mean, last month, Bush gave a speech This was September 5th, in which he accused al-Qaeda of doing exactly what he's doing right now.
And bin Laden says that al-Qaeda intends to launch, in his words, a media campaign to create a wedge between the American people and their government. This media campaign, bin Laden says, will send the American people a number of messages, including that their government will bring them more losses in finances and casualties.
Now, my BuzzFlash book of the month is called Messages to the World. The author is Osama bin Laden. Mark Carlin, who is the publisher of BuzzFlash.com, and I really struggled with this because the book is a collection of bin Laden's speeches and writings, and it is at times insanely anti-Semitic. I mean, at times, just dripping with hatred, not just for the state of Israel and Zionists, but for Jews in general, and others as well. You know, the Christians, the West, the Saudi royal family, I mean, fill in the blank. But what finally got us was, Sun Tzu's, was it Lao Tzu, I think, whichever it was, Sun Tzu, I believe it was, who wrote The Art of War. And he said, you must know your enemy. If you don't know your enemy, you're in big trouble. And I remember back in I remember the story of how in 1938, nobody in the United States had read Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf. It was not in print in the United States. And Alan Cranston, who was working for United Press International at the time as a reporter, later the senator from California, Alan Cranston, well, let me back up just a little bit. In 1937, an American publishing company took a copy of Mein Kampf and published it, but they stripped out all of Hitler's anti-Semitism and all his denunciation of the Jews and all his basically predictions of what he was doing. You know, we will come after them with steel, these kinds of things. They stripped it all out. They sanitized it. And Cranston said, this is dangerous. You can't do that. And so with his own money, Alan Cranston got Mein Kampf translated into the English and in 1938 published it in full with footnotes by Alan Cranston saying, you see what he's saying here? You see what he's saying here? Maybe we should pay attention to what this guy's saying. And a year later, 1939, Adolf Hitler sued Alan Cranston in a court in Connecticut and for violation of his copyright. And the court ruled that, in fact, Cranston had violated his copyright and Mein Kampf was pulled from U.S. shelves. And Americans didn't get to read Mein Kampf again until after Hitler was dead in 1945. So we decided, let's put out the words of bin Laden. You know, in the context of what Sun Tzu wrote, he said, I say, know your enemy and know yourself. In 100 battles, you will never be defeated. If you're ignorant of the enemy but know yourself, your chances of winning or losing are equal. If you're ignorant both of your enemy and of yourself, you are sure to be defeated in every battle. And speaking, in my opinion, of this day, Sun Tzu also said, those who excel in war first cultivate their own humanity and justice and maintain their laws and institutions. By these means, they make their governments invincible. And by the way, I know we've got a bunch of people on hold here. I am going to get to your calls in just a minute, but I just want to make this point. Bush goes on this rant, and he says that bin Laden is saying this. Well, I just read all of the extant writings of bin Laden. It took me the last couple of months to do it before I wrote the book review for BuzzFlash. And I can't find anywhere where bin Laden actually says this. So why is Bush just making this up? Well, again, it's part of this media campaign. They are so good at controlling the media. That's, like I said, with this Mark Foley thing of, let's talk about Foley, and we'll try to spin it. Number one, yes, let's just deal with it like a scandal so that we don't talk about the fact that the Bush administration allowed 9/11 to happen. Or at the very least, it happened because of the absolute, abject, criminal incompetence of the Bush administration, as Bob Woodward is pointing out in his new book. Or number two, let's try to do like Newt Gingrich did and say, oh, well, you know, we couldn't out Foley because as a pedophile, because that would be gay bashing. I mean, say what?
Of the Congressional Caucus dealing with exploited children. No second thoughts about that?
Well, you could have second thoughts about it, but I think had they overly aggressively reacted to the initial round, they would also have been accused of gay bashing.
Yeah. See, I mean, this is like, you know, let's spin this thing, but let's keep this in the headlines so that we're not talking about, you know, about what's the, you know, what's the real issue. And again, I let me just play this Bush clip one more time, because like I said, my book of the month in BuzzFlash is the collected writings of bin Laden. And it's just not there.
In it, bin Laden says that Al-Qaeda intends to launch, in his words, a media campaign to create a wedge between the American people and their government.
No, it doesn't. It's not there.
This media campaign, bin Laden says, will send the American people a number of messages.
He's making this up.
Including that their government will bring them more losses in finances and casualties.
And he's making it up because Bush's intent, frankly, was to bring us more losses in finances and casualties. Will in South Fork, Colorado. Hey, Will, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing today, Truth Teller?
I'm great. We have about a minute before we've got to take a break.
Well,
what's
be
on
really
your mind?
Quick. I'm just so darn happy to hear that we get our numeric system back. We have to take advantage. 17. No, and that's the new number, people. Not 9/11. 710.
Well, you mean 610.
Is it 610?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 7/10, July 10th. You're right.
7/10. Yeah. I did that myself when I called in, man.
Yeah.
7/10. Have a great day, man. Later.
Thanks a lot, Will. I appreciate it. Yeah, 7/10. There we go. Mark in Redmond, Washington. Hey, Mark.
Hello. I just called about 7/10 in 2001 when I believe that's the same day that the CIA met with bin Laden at a U.S. military hospital in the Middle East.
Are you kidding?
No, that's what's been reported in some European press, and I've read it in several books. So it makes sense that that's
David,
why I called upon you to talk about that.
You're saying July 10th was when the CIA was meeting with bin Laden.
Right.
Interesting. Okay, I have to.
I think it was in Yemen.
In Yemen. Okay, I've got to track that down. That's if that's the case, Mark. Thanks for the heads up. I appreciate it. That's a good one. Kurt in Tacoma. Hey, Kurt.
Good morning, Tom. Hey, I spent the weekend listening to the Republican deflectors pointing out that President Clinton had 7 years to get bin Laden while Bush only had 8 months. Did I miss something, or hasn't President Bush been in office for almost 6 years now, and isn't bin Laden still on the loose?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What a surprise.
The other thing...
Kurt, let me put you on hold here for a second. We'll pick you up on the other side of this break. Yes. He has had 6 years. But somehow the press doesn't get that. It's like Tim Russert on Meet the Press this weekend. His glue in our chat room points out. He says, you know, a third of the Abramoff money went to Democrats. No, I'm sorry. None of the Abramoff money went to Democrats. But Tim Russert and the mainstream media, they're so happy to pick up the Republican talking points. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I got upon a train one day, went to work in my usual way, got some coffee, went to my desk. Suddenly I had this pain in my chest. Oh, no, I said, the boss must be coming. Yeah, the boss walks in, sets herself down, gives what she thinks is a thoughtful frown. She says, we're in a slump, you know, and as a result, you've got to go. You have been downsized. I said, ouch. So as a result of this management stunt, I was unemployed for a couple of months. Found myself another job. Nose to the grindstone, worked like a dog. Then they said, we've got too much workforce. We got to have a release of resources. This means you. That meant me. So I found myself a crappier job, working for a happier slob. He had an upbeat look in his eye, even when he said we were being right-sized. What does that mean? It means I'm unemployed. Again. So I put the horse before the cart, went to work at the local Walmart. It was just like I thought it would be. We were all one retail family. I went where the Walmart bus went. Then they had a payroll adjustment. My God, the Walmart family has disowned me. Dusted myself off, got in my vehicle, went to work in another cubicle. By now I viewed my job with reverence. Then I faced involuntary severance. Yeah, go on. Take another little piece of my heart.
There you go. 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This is from Le Figaro, the French news service. Dubai, one of the seven emirates of the Federation of the United Arab Emirates, northeast of Abu Dhabi. This city, population 350,000, was the backdrop of a secret meeting between Osama bin Laden and the local CIA agent in July. That's July of 2001. That's July of 2001 when George Bush is president. That's July of 2001, 7 months after the CIA and FBI have formally decided, found, that bin Laden was responsible for the bombing of the USS Cole, which happened when George Bush was president. They did not come to that conclusion when Bill Clinton was president. They came to that conclusion right after the Supreme Court appointed George Bush as president. Having taken off from the Quetta airport in Pakistan, bin Laden was transferred to the hospital upon his arrival at Dubai airport. He was accompanied by his personal physician and faithful lieutenant, who could be Ayman al-Zawahiri. He's a pediatrician, by the way. But on this source, we are not entirely certain. Four bodyguards, as well as a male Algerian nurse, and admitted to the American Hospital, a glass and marble building situated between Al Garhoud and Al Maktoum bridges. Each floor of the hospital has two VIP suites and 15 rooms. The Saudi billionaire was admitted to the well-respected urology department run by Terry Calloway, a gallstone and infertility specialist. He declined to respond to our questions. So, anyhow, as we were talking with Kurt in Tacoma. Hey, Kurt, you wanted to make one other point. Let's wrap it up here.
Yeah, in regards to Representative Foley, I noted today that the news said that Representative Foley is on the road to reoffending by checking himself into a rehab center and stating that an alcohol problem. Implying that, of course, don't blame me. The alcohol made me do it.
Yeah, it's the Rush Limbaugh defense.
You notice that implying, if you break it apart, it's the imp is lying.
Yeah, there you go. All righty. Well said, Kurt. Thanks a lot. Well said. Oh, my goodness. Rich, driving in Connecticut. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, love your show.
Thank you.
You're one of the most informed guys, I think, on the radio, right or left. One of the things that found, and I'm an informed person, too, I found very deeply in a magazine I read last Friday that worried me. It has some summaries and made the major news. The first thing was they thwarted a bombing in the Green Zone, and Baghdad's on lockdown, and that hasn't gotten any coverage. And the Prime Minister of Iraq is all mad. The second thing...
Now, let me interrupt you right there. The fact of bad news in Iraq is not getting any coverage. You know that 4 out of 5 American voters who list Iraq as their top priority also say that they are going to vote Democratic. 4 out of 5 American voters who list terrorism as their top fear say that they're going to vote Republican.
Okay.
So the Republican Party is trying to keep this all terrorism all the time meme going and no Iraq any of the time.
Okay. The other thing I was worried about was I read how much soft money the Republicans are pouring into this, and the Democrats don't have any soft money backers. George Soros declined to do it this go-around, and he declined to be interviewed for the article. And it was confusing to the magazine editors on why that if the Democrats are such a shoo-in, then why isn't there soft money backers that were in the 2004 election backing them this time? And I wondered the same thing, because I know in Ohio we are getting swift voted. The Americans for Progress are running very scary terror ads with a retired Marine general in Ohio, and Brown is not coming back with anything on them.
Yeah, and he needs to. It was interesting to watch Sherrod Brown and Mike DeWine on Meet the Press or Face the Nation,
whatever it was.
Oh,
you saw that too?
I saw it, and it was obvious that DeWine had come in with 3 talking points that he needed to say. Brown voted against body armor 10 times. He voted against the war in Iraq 15 times. He had 3 talking points that no matter what Tim Russert said, he was going to get out. And Sherrod Brown had come in without any talking points. He thought he was just there to have a reasonable conversation. And it was, frankly, rather tragic to watch. Although Sherrod Brown, I thought, did a good job of standing up for himself, but I think in balance, Tim Russert let DeWine just get away with murder in that thing and kept shutting up Sherrod Brown. It was a shame. Rich, thanks for the call. Good point you make. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. You know, that bumper music talking about, I'm talking on a satellite, it just amazes me. When I was 13, I got my ham radio license. When I was 12, I got my novice license. When I was 13, I got my general ticket, WA8MWL. And it so amazed me that I could sit in the basement of my parents' house in Lansing, Michigan, and you know, tap on a Morse key, you know, on a da 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 da, etc., and be answered by somebody halfway around the world. I mean, it just so amazed me, and I still am in awe. I mean, just it's like magic. I guess it's probably kind of dorky to be amazed by this stuff, but I mean, I my vocal cords are modulating air molecules, right? Air is passing through my throat, and that's vibrating a diaphragm on a microphone here in Portland, Oregon, which is sent on a digital telephone line to New York City, where Andrew and Lauren mix this thing together in the studios of Air America, and then they send it on a digital phone line to Denver, Colorado, where it's popped up onto a satellite, onto the Air America stream on the Westwood One satellite, and then that goes down to the local to radio stations all over the country who take it off the satellite, and then they send it out to a transmitter, which puts it out, and you're hearing it in your car or your home where a loudspeaker is vibrating the air just like my vocal cords are right now, and you're hearing it as if you're hearing me. And then if you call, your telephone call is probably being bounced off a satellite someplace. It's going into New York. It's being routed from New York to here, and I mean, it's just the whole thing, and it's all happening instantaneously. It's just mind-boggling. Anyhow, we'll be back with your calls in just a second. First, this just out from CNN and the White House. Tony Snow, again, by implicitly. I mean, these guys are all wink, wink, nod, nod, but they're trying to say, oh, yeah, it's another sex scandal. It's just like Bill Clinton. You know, we've had these sex scandals before, and they've been more than naughty emails. You know, after all, it was Clinton was actually, you know, there was a stained dress that came out of this, and there was that thing about the cigar. I mean, you know, it's Soledad O'Brien on CNN asking Tony Snow about this.
Yeah, I would assume everybody would want to know, including the president. I mean, we're not talking about any old person. We're talking about the leadership of the Republicans in Congress. Why would he not hear something that's disturbing, or his office? Over-friendly. When I see that word as a parent, and I think any parent would say, whoa, over-friendly? Any communication between a 16-year-old and a congressman, why doesn't that raise red flags? Major, massive red flags.
Yeah, look, I hate to tell you, but it's not always pretty up there on Capitol Hill, and there have been other scandals, as you know, that have been more than simply naughty emails.
There have been other scandals that have been more than just naughty emails. Yes, that Bill Clinton, you know, he was getting it on with Monica Lewinsky. It's how dare he? Of course, she was a consenting adult, not a 16-year-old, but, you know, they're not going to talk about that. But I tell you, Tony Snow was at least happy that Soledad O'Brien was taking him to task for defending the Republican leadership about a sex scandal rather than asking why Condoleezza Rice ignored George Tenet's warning on July 10th that Osama bin Laden was coming to get us, or rather than asking why it was that Osama bin Laden was in an American hospital in Dubai in July of 2001, when in January of 2001, right after George Bush had been appointed president by the Supreme Court, The FBI and the CIA issued a joint finding that bin Laden was responsible for blowing up the USS Cole in October of 2000. I guarantee you, Tony Snow is ecstatic about the fact that that's not being discussed. Instead, it's a sex scandal. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jeremy in Syracuse, New York. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the program.
Wow, good to talk to you, Tom. Long-time listener on the White Rose Society podcast, first-time caller, because I never get a chance to actually listen to you live. So,
well, thank you.
I'm in my mid-20s. I'm a new progressive. I became a progressive in the 2004 election cycle. And I listen to you a lot. I read a lot. But I'm really curious about whatever happened in the late 70s. And what I mean is that I can read, watch documentaries, hear you talk about the 60s, about Watergate, and then all of a sudden the Reagan Revolution. But during the late 70s, we had a Democratic president. We had a Democratic Congress. I'm not sure about the Senate. But yet the only things that come through history to my mind is stagflation, energy crisis, or something like this. So I'm just wondering why progressives don't usually talk about it, or you know, where I can find some more information about what happened besides the October surprise.
Well, the simple fact of the matter is Jimmy Carter was a one-term president, and he was a one-term president because the sins of the Vietnam War, which to a substantial extent were shared between a Democrat and a Republican, between Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, came due. You know, the bill came due. They financed the Vietnam War. Johnson, I don't think that he had any idea it was going to get as big as it did when he started it, but nonetheless, Johnson and Nixon financed the Vietnam War with debt, and that debt started coming due when Jimmy Carter was president, and that produced a serious economic downturn, just like sometime over the next 10 years, we're going to see a serious economic downturn as a consequence of the war in Iraq, which is even more expensive and being financed the same way by debt. And so you had that, plus in the early 70s, this was now during the Nixon administration, but you know, still it was echoing into Carter's administration. You had the war in the Middle East, which led to the Arab oil boycott, oil embargo, which dislocated the American economy. Jimmy Carter, I thought he was a very good president, and in retrospect, I think he was probably one of the best presidents of the 20th century. But he was loaded with this horrible legacy of the Nixon corruption and of Nixon and LBJ's war in Vietnam and the cost of it, and he was determined to do something about it. I mean, he said we're gonna fix this energy problem. For example, here's two short clips from a speech that Jimmy Carter gave on July 15th, 1979. This was, you know, the next to the last year of his presidency. He had been president for little more than two years, and he declared that the United States was going to become energy independent for all practical purposes by the year 2000.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And then he continued to say,
moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Which would, had he done that and had his conservation standards stood, if Ronald Reagan hadn't deconstructed all that as soon as he came into office on the heels of big oil money, we would now be independent of Mideast oil, and 9/11 never would have happened because we wouldn't have cared that Kuwait was taken by Saddam Hussein. It would have simply been, you know, one of those battles over in that part of the world. And we wouldn't have based our soldiers in Saudi Arabia, which is what got Osama bin Laden so upset that he attacked us. So Osama bin Laden, right up front, and conservatives and progressives agree on this. I mean, this is just a historical fact. Osama bin Laden came after us, assuming that it really was him, came after us for two reasons. Number one, we had soldiers based in Saudi Arabia, which he considered a desecration, and they were based there in 91 by Bush Sr. to stage for the Iraq war against Saddam Hussein when he invaded Kuwait. And number two, that he felt that the price of oil was too low and that we were sucking out the valuable natural resources of the Holy Land of Saudi Arabia, and he wanted the price of oil to go up to $80 to $100 a barrel. And Bush pulled out all those soldiers from Bin Sultan Air Force Base about, what, 6-8 months ago, gave bin Laden what he wanted, and the price of oil is up, so bin Laden's happy, you know, and now Pakistan is giving him amnesty and saying, you just hang out in Waziristan and be a good guy, and we're not going to pick on you. So, you know, and there hasn't been a terror attack in the United States since then because, you know, we quit doing that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, you know, good histories on this, anything that you know of, any of his, like, of his time as a president?
You know, I don't know. I haven't frankly looked for any. I should. But, I really don't know of a good history that, you know, that isn't, you know, a partisan history, frankly, of the 70s. There should be one. But let me look around, and, you know, if I come across something in the next few days, I'll mention it on the air. Okay?
I think so.
Thanks a lot for the call. Cynthia in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Cynthia.
Hey, Tom. You know, I was just listening to the last caller. He might check a site called Right Web. They have a lot of good information there. And I remember one day you talked about the old Team B. It was just, you know, some real forgotten history that most people have no idea about. So you could check Right Web.
Okay, is that righthtweb.com?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Now, one bad thing about Jimmy Carter is Zbigniew Brzezinski's bright idea to support the fighters on that were fighting for God or Allah, because we're plagued by them today.
Yeah, you're right.
I loved you were talking about 9/11 today, and I'd like to know who disclosed these IMs and emails about Foley, because this is a massive distraction from the crimes, from Condi, you know, knowing, warned. The 9/11 Commission wasn't told about the warning she received in July.
That's a good question.
Wanted to talk about sex.
Could it have been the Republicans who did it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, could they have decided that they'd throw a guy over the edge, figuring he was going to go sooner or later anyway because it was becoming public knowledge? That's a great question, Cynthia. I don't have any idea, and I've not seen any, and I've read a lot of media on this. I haven't seen any media that sources it. We'll have to look into that. Cynthia, thank you for the call. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 45 minutes past the hour. The place for being progressive never felt so good.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
So you think you can tell heaven from hell? Blue skies and pain. Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail? A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
And welcome back to the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America, announcing, by the way, the October Surprise Contest on the Tom Hartman Program message blogs. First person to post the correct answer, and we won't know until after the elections, but in retrospect, we will look back and award the winner the correct answer to what's the Bush administration's October surprise. First person to post the correct answer gets an autographed copy of my book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. Day after the election, we'll be putting up a poll so members of the message board can vote on the winner, and four runners-up each will receive an autographed copy of Screwed, and we'll announce that winner on November 13th. So, there you go. 1-866-440-8466 is our telephone number. Wendy Wang with Talk Radio News, the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., on the line, talkradionews.com. Hey, Wendy.
Hi there, Tom. How are you this afternoon?
I'm great. What's going on in Washington, D.C.?
Well, Washington, D.C. is supposed to be very, very quiet at this time of year, but unfortunately, a lot is going on. From Bob Woodward's book called State of Denial that launched all kinds of accusations against this administration to one Florida congressman named, we all know him by now, Representative Foley. I mean, he is just absolutely tearing this town to shreds, and everybody, of course, is talking about the fact that he wrote some very explicit IMs to a former page.
Yeah, and in fact, now it's coming out that he was trying to arrange a rendezvous with this page. But Wendy Wang, I'm curious, when I see a Republican sex scandal at the top of Drudge, and I know the Drudge is, you know, handmaiden to the right,
right,
it says to me that there's something that they don't want discussed. And my take on this is that the reason that so many right-wing spokespeople, ranging from Newt Gingrich to Dan Bartlett to Tony Snow, repeatedly making himself available to all kinds of media to talk about this thing with Congressman Mark Foley of Florida, is happening is because they don't want anybody discussing the fact that Woodward has said that Condi Rice was warned in July of 2001 that 9/11 was going to happen, and she not only did nothing about it, but she dismissed George Tenet and Dick Clark and said, you know, go away, we're not going to talk about this.
That's a fantastic point, because this book could have been what was on everyone's mind this week, but with the distraction, the Mark Foley case, we have sort of turned our attention or divide of our attention away from the very fact that we're getting all kinds of information about just what happened the July before 9/11 actually happened.
The timing on this is just like the JonBenet Ramsey thing with John Mark Carr being arrested and being introduced to the press, by the way, by an agent of the Department of Homeland Security in Thailand, oddly enough, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security,
right,
the same morning that Judge Anna Diggs Taylor ruled that George W. Bush had broken the law and broken and committed felonies.
Exactly.
And
what's more titillating than a sex scandal? Absolutely.
Right. And the Republicans have known about this for 5 years. They've known about Foley for 5 years now. So I'm curious, is there any evidence that Foley was busted in this thing by Republicans?
There is absolutely no evidence that they are actually busted by Republicans, as you said. In fact, a lot of people are looking at Dennis Hastert and saying that his seat may actually be in trouble because he seemed to have had this information. He was given this information by Tom Reynolds and John Bonner, who is, of course, the majority leader over the House side now. And
right,
both men came to Dennis Hastert, gave him the details on this, and they were both very concerned, and Dennis Hastert chose not to do anything about it. And he's given a lot of Republican individuals many, many things to talk about.
So how did this get into the press?
This got into the press because the parents of the boy, one of the boys who allegedly received this email, went to the news media and broke it that way.
So the Republicans are just essentially taking advantage of it. I mean, they're being hurt by it, but on the other hand, they have two great messages that they're getting out with this thing. Great from their point of view. One is you've got Newt Gingrich trying to conflate pedophilia with homosexuality. Here's
right.
Here's Newt Gingrich on Fox News.
Well, he's got second thoughts about it, but I think had they overly aggressively reacted to the initial round, they would also have been accused of gay bashing.
So Newt Gingrich trying to say that this is all about being gay rather than sex with minors, number
right.
one. And number two, nobody is talking about Condi Rice being given information in July of 2001 when, by the way, bin Laden was in a hospital, the American hospital in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, and this was 5 months after the CIA and FBI had both concluded that bin Laden was responsible for the bombing of the USS Cole. Condi Rice was given information that 9/11 was probably going to happen.
Absolutely.
And
it's also taken away from the fact that many people are calling for Rumsfeld's resignation, and it's not just something that's been happening within recent months, as we've seen in the media. According to this book, the Bob Woodward book, in the 2004 re-election of the president, a lot of people were coming forward and saying that Rumsfeld did not have a strategic plan for the war in Iraq, and that he was filling his cabinet full of people who were on his side, old cronies of his, and he did not actually have a strategy for what we were going to do in Iraq.
Right. Yeah, good point. KJ in Camas, Washington, has a thought he'd like to share. Wendy, stick around. You can comment on this, too. We just
Absolutely.
Have about a minute left. Hey, KJ, what's on your mind?
Your last caller has brought up some really disturbing patterns. This we talked about Carter suffering from the legacy of Johnson and Nixon, and the Reagan Revolution was the result. Are we going to see this all over again?
You mean if a Democrat gets elected, I think there's a good chance of that. Wendy, a 10-second response?
Well, I think we're going to see that as well. I would have to absolutely agree. It just seems like it's a culture in Washington, and it's an unfortunate epidemic.
We almost don't want the Democrats to get elected because bad times are coming, and they'll get blamed for it.
Exactly.
The Republicans keep setting it up. There you go. Well, we may. I mean, maybe they've got enough machines rigged. I mean, who knows? Wendy Wang, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Wendy. Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. We'll be right back. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. 6 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you as we begin the third hour of our program. In just a minute, we're going to be speaking with David Callahan, the author of The Moral Center, a fascinating book and should be a strategy set for the Democratic Party. But first, let's just wrap up a few calls from the previous 2 hours here. Lance in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Lance, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I would just recommend that people who have any doubts about why we're in Iraq read the letter from the Project for New American Century dated January 26, 98. And look for any reference.
Signed by Don Rumsfeld and Jeb Bush.
It's signed by half of the first Bush administration: Elliot Abrams, Richard Armitage, John Bolton,
Paul Wolfowitz.
Pearl. There's no reference at all to the poor Kurds. There's no reference at all to 9/11 because, of course, this is 3 years before the attack.
Actually, there is a reference to 9/11. They say that it's going to take an event of Pearl Harbor proportions to get the American people to support this.
Well, and there is reference to endangering the world supply of oil, which they don't like to talk about now. So I think that's where people ought to go if they want to see where this administration is centered relative to Iraq. Actually, 9/11 delayed the attack of Iraq. It didn't expedite it.
Oh, that's an interesting theory.
That's my feeling. Yeah. Anyway,
okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot. Lou in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Lou.
Hey. I have a question that I'd like you to ask some of these right think tank strategists that you have access to.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys that promote the ideology of preemptive war as a policy.
Right.
I'd like somebody to ask, why did Bush not campaign on the issue of Iraq in light of the information that we now have that this was such a high priority issue pre-9/11?
Well, actually, they did. I mean, the whole drumbeat to war in the 2002 election, that wasn't Bush who was running, but it was Republicans. In 2002, their campaign strategy for the midterm elections was to whip up fear about Iraq and then have a war after the elections. And that's exactly what they did. And Rove, essentially, this spring, said he's going to do the exact same thing again this year. And he's doing it. It's Iran. They're beating the drums of fear against Iran. And they're going to whip up a whole lot of hysteria and a whole lot of polarization of Americans around Iran. Anything but Iraq, Iran and terrorism and more terrorism. And then after the elections, if they're going to have a war, they'll probably have it.
Yeah, specifically, like, do these guys believe that the American people should decide, like, on the real ideology of preemptive strikes, even beyond Iran?
Oh, it's a good question to put to somebody like David Tebow. I'll do that next time I have one a month. Thank you, Lou. I appreciate it. In fact, the last country to do a preemptive war was Germany with Poland. Jim in Pittsburgh. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, Tom. Tom, I brought that up numerous times, and you can't get any reaction to it. But if you look at the Caspian Sea pipeline, or the oil pipeline from Caspian Sea to Pakistan, and the involvement, you got to go this way. You got to look for Halliburton, Cheney, Bin Laden connections, and you will find out that they discussed what type of government they was going to set up in Afghanistan. And this was
when Bin Laden was on our side, when we were funding the Mujahideen in Afghanistan.
Well, it almost sounds like he was an employee of Halliburton.
Well, not so much Halliburton back then. I think it was the oil company in California that Hamid Karzai worked for?
Unocal.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I really think that was it. Jim, thanks for the call. Ed in Walterville, Oregon. Hey, Jim. Or Ed.
Hi. I guess before I get into the Foley folly, I'd like to back up a little bit what the previous caller said about the Project for a New American Century and how they not only outlined their need to go into Iraq, but the need to go into Iraq was to build the forts and to buttress against the attack against Iran, which is going to be necessary to make the new Middle East, which
sure,
is main
sure.
obstacle.
And Iran has almost as much oil as Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
That was their main
and
obstacle.
Also to protect Saudi Arabia.
That was their primary obstacle to creating the new American century and the new world order.
Yep. Absolutely, well said. Ed, thanks for the call. I got to run here. We've got David Callahan with us. He's the author of The Moral Center, How We Can Reclaim Our Country from Diehard Extremists, Rogue Corporations, Hollywood Hacks, and Pretend Patriots. Hey, David.
Hey there.
Thanks for being with us today. Selfishness careening out of control, violent consumerism and culture for our children, a lack of a greater purpose. How do we reclaim our country from diehard extremists, rogue corporations, Hollywood hacks, and pretend patriots?
Well, I think step one is to change the debate about moral values in this country. You know, for too long that debate has been a very narrow conversation about a few hot-button social issues. It's abortion, gay marriage, school prayer. And we've had that very narrow values debate for the past 30 years. And it's basically been framed by the religious right and the Republican Party.
I know that. And here's what I don't get, David Callahan. By the way, the website's demos.org or moral.com. What I don't get is why doesn't James Dobson, with Focus on the Family, I mean, you know, he's got a multi-million-dollar empire here. He's doing very well, thank you very much. Why doesn't he start talking about poverty in America? Why doesn't he start talking about the plight of the middle class? I mean, this is going to resonate with a whole lot more people than be afraid of gays will, and it would allow them to grab the moral center. Why not?
Well, I think that the religious right is in a very tight embrace with the libertarian side of the Republican Party, and it's a largely political embrace, and I think there's a lot of grassroots evangelicals who do care about poverty, do want to work on those economic challenges facing families, but their political leadership I think is much more Machiavellian, and that's one of the reasons I do think that there's an opportunity here to move into the moral center. I mean, I think that the focus on the family connects with a lot of Americans who are worried about all those cultural pressures that the family is under, you know, the trash stuff coming out of the media, you know, the tendency of a lot of people to get divorced and what have you, and there's a lot of anxiety about that. Those issues need to be addressed, but the economic issues facing families also need to be addressed.
Well, it's one of the major issues that's driving divorce in this country, for example.
Right.
You know, more than half of divorces come about as a consequence of money problems.
Well, if you look at who's most likely to get divorced, it is the economically most fragile couple.
It's the working poor.
Yeah, and it's not that those people love each other less. It's that their relationships are much more vulnerable to coming under intense economic pressure. Who gets divorced least in this country? The most educated people, the most educated, well-off people, which
right.
flies in the face of the kind of conservative rap on marriage, which is that it's feminists and liberals who've undermined marriage. I mean,
right.
Massachusetts
has the lowest divorce rate in the country.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. You know, we don't know how to change the culture in this country where a lot of people bring a pretty disposable attitude towards their personal relationships, but we do know how to change the economic situation.
So how do we communicate this to Joe Sixpack?
How do we communicate? I think
how
does
the Democratic Party do that?
You know, I think Joe Sixpack already understands this. But the problem is the Democratic Party doesn't cross a basic threshold of credibility when it comes to values because they are unwilling to say, hey, wait a minute, some of these social freedoms that we fought so hard for, you know, such as the right to divorce or contraception or abortion or whatever, some of these social freedoms, they do have some downsides that we need to manage, you know, that they are having some negative impacts. I mean, everybody understands this, but I think liberal politicians are very reluctant to actually say it out loud for some good reasons. And so we don't cross the threshold of credibility. So when we start talking about child care or something like that, it's seen as just another effort to
But the flip side of that is that there's also a downside on the right to their argument against, for example, gay marriage, and that is that it fuels bigotry. I mean, just like you can say the left saying, hey, isn't it great that we brought you the ability to have divorce in the United States, which at various times in various states has been illegal, or contraception, you know, the Connecticut versus what a Cunningham case or whatever it was. You know, but there's a downside to divorce and contraception, and you need to pay attention to that. The right, there's a downside to all of the rights agenda.
Oh yeah, well there's a big downside, and I think that the Republican Party is increasingly being associated with a repressive agenda which is against social freedom.
Because of the Schiavo thing, for example?
The Schiavo thing, I mean they are actively campaigning to roll back sex education and replace it with abstinence only, which most Americans don't believe in. They would like to get rid of the no-fault divorce laws. I mean they have a pretty radical agenda when it comes to sexuality and social freedom that is well outside the mainstream.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party is increasingly associated with that agenda. But the conservatives nevertheless often monopolize the conversation on morality because they're the only people who are really out there who are talking about it.
Or is it that they're the only people that the mainstream media are paying attention to because they support each other's interests?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have not heard a lot of liberals take on these issues so well.
Yeah, well, you know, I hear them talk about it locally. I hear them talk about it within the party, but I never see them on Meet the Press. You know,
right.
David Callahan, his book is The Moral Center, How We Can Reclaim Our Country from Diehard Extremists, Rogue Corporations, Hollywood Hacks, and Pretend Patriots, Demos.org, and Moral.com. David, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Have you had enough
of hypocrisy?
Have you had enough
of the spit and scream?
Have you had enough of the bit you want to scream and jump?
Yes, it does, yes, it does.
Have you had enough
of the rubber stamp?
Have you had enough
the wire tap?
Have you had enough? Then it's time to throw the rascals out.
Cause they're all corrupt.
Have you had enough?
Or be a
divvy dog. Have you had enough? Then it's time to throw the rascals out.
There you go, my friends. And it's not just enough to vote. You have to show up at the local Democratic Party and say, I'm here. I'll walk six blocks and pass out pamphlets. I'll make phone calls on election day or any day before then. I'm going to participate. I'll be part of this. 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here on the radio support group of, by, and for We the People of the United States. Let's take a look at what's going on with the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
I want to know the men in the shadows of. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight and to die. And there are lies in the balance.
Following our security and other developments in Iraq, reported on Monday as of 1100 GMT by Reuters, Dateline Baghdad, gunmen wearing camouflage uniforms snatched 14 people from around a computer store in central Baghdad. And near Suwaira, police found the bodies of four people shot dead. In Baghdad, a roadside bomb killed three people and wounded eight in the Sadoun district. In Basra, a British soldier was killed and another wounded following an indirect fire attack on their base in Basra. In Baghdad, a car bomb targeting a police patrol killed two people and wounded two in the Waziriya district. In Ishika, a gunman killed three men 60 miles north of Baghdad. In Baghdad, gunmen killed Faris Khalil, a colonel in the Interior Ministry. Also in Baghdad, roadside bomb targeting an Iraqi army patrol went off, wounding three soldiers in the Yarmouk district. In Baghdad, a roadside bomb wounded a civilian in eastern Baghdad. In Dulaya, gunmen killed a man on Sunday in that town, 40 kilometers north of Baghdad. In near Baghdad, gunmen kidnapped two people on Sunday. In Mosul, gunmen killed a policeman in that northern city. In Anbar province, two UN Marines, one from a combat unit, the other from headquarters unit, died from wounds sustained due to enemy action. Also, a third from the headquarters unit died in a vehicle accident unrelated to combat. In Suwaira, seven headless bodies were retrieved from the Tigris River downstream of Baghdad. All had their hands tied. Near Kut, gunmen attack a police patrol, killing two officers and wounding three. And in other developments, Parliament renewed the government's emergency powers for a month, contrary to expectations, that did not conduct a second reading of a bill on regional autonomy. Brought to you from your good friends at the Bush administration and the Republican Party. 1-866-440-8466. Charlie in Freeport, Pennsylvania. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Oh, thank God we got you. I mean, you're just a beacon of light, and I don't get a chance to listen to any. You're the only thing on a national scale that I get, you know. But I want to go back to the original first Gulf War.
mm-hmm.
was intentionally brought on by Bush's daddy.
Oh, yeah, they sold it. They hired a PR firm in Washington, D.C., and brought in the daughter of the ambassador from Kuwait, who pretended that she wasn't, and she made up this whole story of babies being thrown out of incubators by Iraqi soldiers, which was
exactly.
not true. Which was not true. She had not been there. And that was the thing that pushed the American people over to the point where they were willing to support Bush Sr. in having a war in Kuwait.
Well, you remember, I think, April Glaspie.
Yeah. When
Saddam Hussein asked her, and it was two different, and that's in print.
For our listeners who don't know, April Gillespie was the assistant to the then attaché to Baghdad, who was Joe Wilson, by the way. Joe Wilson was our ambassador in Baghdad.
Okay.
And when she was asked by Saddam Hussein, if I attack Kuwait, what's the U.S. response going to be? And she basically said, we're not going to respond.
Yeah, and then I remember James Baker in the book I had from Fredman versus George Bush the First. I mean, the original writer's in there, and Jim Baker says the USA does not have a position, and he couldn't believe it. Saddam Hussein couldn't believe it. He asked again. He asked April Glaspie,
yeah.
And
yeah.
James Baker again says the U.S. does not have a position, because remember at that time, Saddam was saying that they were slant drilling, stealing his oil.
Yeah. And they were.
Yeah.
And that's what he was so upset about.
Exactly. And then
and they are again, by the way.
He goes ahead and invades it then,
Yeah. Yeah, and he also called it the 38th province or something like that. No, good point, Charlie. It's a good point. I've got to move along here. I've got a bunch of other calls. Xavier in Santa Cruz. Hey, Xavier, we've got a little less than a half a minute left. What's up?
Okay, then I'll make it brief. I just want to tell you about, first of all, briefly, there's a movie, 911 Press for Truth. It has the timeline and all that.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, but the main thing I want to talk about is your last guest.
The divorce rate.
I agree that we need to concentrate on improving our wealth, but I need more time than this.
Okay, Xavier, I'll put you on hold. We've got a guest coming up, but after that we'll be taking more calls. If you want to stick around, we can continue the conversation. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm sorry, the tyranny of the clock here, but it's a good thing. I mean, it keeps the radio station on the air, keeps the program going. What we have to do. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. A place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least clean elections and maybe a decent environment. In just a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with Jim Mottavelli of E! Magazine, emagazine.com, the website. But first, just to wrap up a few phone calls from our last segment, we were talking with Xavier in Santa Cruz. Hey, Xavier.
Hi. Yeah, I used to work a lot with left-wing people and activism and whatnot, and I found that I wasn't able to make any money while I was doing that. I now work with right-wingers more, and I find that a lot of the men that I work with are divorced and have been so because they've lost their ability to make money. And I agree that we need to fight for fair wages and things like that, but I think one of the things that the left doesn't address is that the ease with which that women will just divorce their husband if they stop making money. And I think we need to address that more.
Well, how? Do you think it should be made illegal?
No. It's definitely not illegal. But I think that there's always this attitude of if a man is being violent to a woman, definitely divorce him.
Yeah.
But we need to, just the lore that we share with each other, we need to make it okay for men to work hard and be a part of the family, and I think
to be the working poor. I mean, the reality though, Xavier, is that poverty puts incredible pressure on a family, and it's not just the man's not bringing home the bacon. It's that although we do live in a society that suggests or implies, I'd say openly says in many regards, that if a woman is earning more than a man, or if she's the one who's the primary breadwinner, that there's something wrong with the man. That's not something that's going to change overnight. It's slowly changing, I think, through the current generation. But nonetheless, the bigger issue is that as long as we have a large chunk of our society that is not capable working a 40-hour week of raising a family, then you're going to have the kind of societal strains that lead to divorce.
We need to do both. What we need to do is look at television commercials. Everything about working class men are demonized from every angle, and that's why just working class men are not so much the privileged class.
I don't disagree with you, and you would probably find fascinating reading in Susan Faludi's book Stiffed. It's a documentary of that issue. Xavier, thanks for the call. Dawn in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Dawn.
Hey, Tom, your show is gold. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
I'm calling because I wanted to refer you and your listeners to an apparently little-known article that Bob Woodward wrote just post 9/11. It's called America's Chaotic Road to War, and this one jumps out for me. It's written January 27th, 2002, still archived at the Post, Washington Post, and in it, he quotes Bush as closing his day on September 11th with having written in his diary, actually having dictated into his diary that this quote, "The Pearl Harbor of the 21st century took place today."
Right.
So
yeah, I remember
uncanny.
That. That's actually been quoted very often, and it raises echoes of that Project for New American Century document in which they, back in 1998, argue for the invasion of Iraq and say it's going to take a Pearl Harbor event to make it happen.
Your previous callers have mentioned that, and I'd say it's a direct reference, uncanny, perhaps a direct reference to that document.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence at all. Don, thank you for the call. Well said. Bill in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bill.
How are you, Tom?
I'm fine. What's up?
I know you'll get better. Tom, the Bushes, I've never seen such a family that is so involved in deceit, lying, keeping information from us. But one of the things that really has always bothered me, you remember the Kurds when Daddy Bush was the president?
Yeah.
And I do remember him on television saying, if you rise up against Saddam, we will help you. And he stood by and watched Saddam.
Well, that wasn't the Kurds. That was the Shia in the South. Actually, one of my very best friends, Horst von Heyer, is a German. He and I went into Bogota, Colombia. We were in Africa together. And Horst went into, right after the Gulf War, during the no-fly zone, when just before the elections, when Daddy Bush was strutting around going, we're going to kick a little Baghdad butt, Horst, on behalf of the International Relief Work organization that I work with, the Kinder and Jugendhilfswerk Salem, went into northern Iraq, into Kurdistan, into the Kurdish region, to try and help out. And he took 36 bullets in his car. And when another dear friend of mine, Gerhard Lipford, from Salem, from Salem in Hirchheim, went down to try and rescue him, the Americans would not let Gerhard across the border to go get Horst, because they didn't want anybody to know that Saddam had hit squads going on in the north, and he was, you know, bulldozing Iraqi Kurdish communities and things. And so Gerhard had to go down the Turkish border about 50, 60 miles and find a guy that he could bribe to get into Iraq. And finally, he brought Horst von Heyer out and flew him up to Frankfurt, and I flew in and you know, met him in the hospital. No, I'll tell you, the situation was grim, and Daddy Bush was not any defender of the Kurds at that time, and the Kurds are still, you know, having a tough time. John Modavelli is with us. He's with E! Magazine, emagazine.com. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Actually, it's Jim Modavelli.
Jim, I'm sorry.
I have a brother named John.
Oh, okay. Well, no, but you're not your brother, so...
No.
The current issue of the cover story in E!, the environmental magazine, dishing dirt. Why would you want to devote a magazine to dirt?
Well, simply because I don't think the subject is covered very much. I mean, we could write about Britney Spears, but I think the subject's been done.
Yeah.
Not very many people have really looked seriously at soil and soil science, and I happen to have a brother who is a soil scientist. And
I have a son who's a soil scientist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they're a dying breed, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's working on his master's degree on it right now.
Really?
In teaching
at
the University of Georgia.
Yeah. One of our points in the story is that colleges are not turning out very many soil scientists, and meanwhile the Bush administration has defunded a lot of soil research, and the result is that the outlook for soil science in the near future is not very good.
Yeah, now the bottom line here is that soil good, healthy dirt. It's not just ground up rock. It's
It's full of biodiversity. It's full of an amazing amount of life. And we don't normally think about that, but a single gram of fertile soil can contain several million microbes. And I've heard E.O. Wilson talk about this, but if you take one heaping tablespoon of healthy soil, it can have 9 billion microorganisms in it, you know, like hundreds of pounds of worms, for instance. So it's amazingly alive. And
Now, there are folks who are selling what they call homeostatic soil organisms, HSOs, for digestion, that, you know, suggesting that back in the old days we used to eat dirt because we ate food that was unwashed. We'd pull the carrots out of the ground and eat it, and that some of these soil organisms are actually necessary for digestion. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with that, but I am familiar with a, we might call a cult or a tradition of eating dirt that exists in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And particular, like, riverbanks are known for the quality of their dirt,
mm-hmm.
and people visit these riverbanks and feast on the stuff regularly.
I've noticed that, you know, some women who are having, particularly when they have problems with heavy menstruation, get anemic, and one of the more common symptoms of this, I've known several people who had this problem, one of the more common symptoms is that they crave chewing ice. And there's a suggestion that actually what they're craving is chewing dirt, that in other societies they would have been eating dirt to get the iron and other minerals out of the dirt.
Well, it may seem gross, but I can't think of any way that would hurt you.
Yeah. It's except for the fact that our dirt isn't healthy anymore. It's full of pesticides and herbicides and chemicals and runoff and mercury coming out of the water and the air.
Yeah, and I think we've taken it for granted and think that it can survive all these onslaughts. And our most recent one is paving it over. I mean, we've taken some of the most fertile soil in the world in the Midwest and turned it into housing developments. And that once that happens, it's pretty irreversible. We rarely recover farmland once it's been turned
into. So water's a big deal. Everybody knows about water. Air is a big deal. Everybody knows about air, even though the Bush administration is assaulting both of them. How do we turn dirt into a high-profile issue?
Well, one way
during the Dust Bowl, people knew about it.
One way we did it was an eye-catching cover on E. I mean, when you're gonna, we have a model covered in dirt. Mm-hmm. We thought maybe people would pay attention to that.
Yeah, I was looking at her picture a minute ago. It seems that you're on your homepage. Your covers are rotating.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I do think there's inherent drama in the story, and Tam Jones, who wrote it, I think did an excellent job of explaining why this should matter and doing it in a really readable way. Ordinarily, if you look at raw soil scientists like my brother or your son might turn out, it's not too accessible to the average reader, but I think she really captured how to make this something people not only will want to read but will care about after they read about it.
But the Bush administration is aggressively turning back legislation that protects our soil. And agricultural practices that the U.S. is exporting to other countries are destroying soil. How do we stop that?
Well, I think as long as the Bush administration is in, it's going to be very protective of agribusiness interests. And through entities like the Farm Bureau, the American Farm Bureau, which is nothing if not devoted to the interests of large farmers, I think as long as Bush is in there, I think that's going to be the case. And certainly we can make our feelings known at the level of our own representatives, and we can try to get information about soil out to people. I think that hasn't been done very much.
We need a fundamental political change, though. I mean, that's
oh, definitely. Well, without a doubt. I would agree with you there, Tom.
There you go. Jim Mottavelli, his magazine, E! Magazine, and you can read all about it at emagazine.com or subscribe there. Jim, thanks for being with us today.
Great.
Good talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman radio program where reason is our lifestyle choice.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
I'm not gonna shut my mouth. I'm for the truth. Come out about the leader with the iron will, and here's a leader to the dollar bill. The light will go down. The light will go down.
The Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, coming up on 9 minutes before the hour. Editor and publisher magazine, Greg Mitchell. The Post also reveals today that the 9/11 Commission was not told about this meeting. This is the meeting that was discussed last night on 60 Minutes. The meeting in July of 2001, in which, New York Times, after being scooped by the New York Times, 60 Minutes, New York Daily, the Washington Post came out with its first excerpt of Bob Woodward's upcoming book, State of Denial. Anyhow, the meeting was where Condi Rice was told by George Tenet, Osama bin Laden's coming to get us. This was in July of 2001. What did Condi Rice do? Nothing. What did George W. Bush do? Nothing. The Post also reveals that the 9/11 Commission was not told about this meeting. A counsel for the 9/11 Commission, Peter Rundlett, wrote late Saturday that the Woodward revelation filled him with, quote, a mixture of shock, anger, and sadness, and suggested that a cover-up had occurred, end of quote. The Woodward excerpt describes how on July 10th, 2001, CIA Director George J. Tenet, with his counterterrorism chief J. Cofer Black at CIA headquarters, met with his counterterrorism chief J. Cofer Black at CIA headquarters to, quote, review the latest on Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda terrorist organization. Black laid out the case, consisting of communications intercepts and other top secret intelligence, showing the increasing likelihood that al-Qaeda would soon attack the United States. The massive fragments made a compelling case, so compelling to Tenet, I'm quoting now from Bob Woodward's book, so compelling to Tenet that he decided he and Black should go to the White House immediately, end of quote. For months, well, here's another quote. For months, Woodward writes, Tenet had been pressing Rice to set a clear counterterrorism policy that would give the CIA stronger authority to conduct covert operations against bin Laden. Tenet and Black hoped to convey the depth of their anxiety and get Rice to kickstart the government into immediate action. Tenet had been losing sleep over the recent intelligence. There was no conclusive smoking gun intelligence, but there was such a huge volume of data that an intelligence officer's instinct strongly suggested that something was coming. But Tenet had been having difficulty getting traction on an immediate bin Laden action plan, in part because Defense Secretary Terry Donald H. Rumsfeld had questioned all the intelligence, asking, could it all be a grand deception? The result, again quoting Bob Woodward, Tenet and Black felt they were not getting through to Rice, Condoleezza Rice. She was polite, but they felt the brush off. President Bush said he didn't want to swat at flies. Tenet left the meeting feeling frustrated. There was no immediate action, and it meant great risk. Black felt the decision was to just keep planning was a sustained policy failure. Rice and the Bush team had been in hibernation too long. Afterward, Tenet looked back at the meeting with Rice as a lost opportunity to prevent or disrupt the attacks. Rice had not moved quickly. He felt she was not organized and did not push people as he had tried to do at the CIA. The Post Peter Black reveals, quote, the July 10th meeting of Rice, Tenet, and Black went unmentioned in various investigations into the 9/11 attacks, and Woodward wrote that Black felt there were things the commissions wanted to know about and things they didn't want to know about. Jamie Gorelick, she's really upset. She says, I can assure you it would have been in our report if we had known to ask about it. Peter Rundlett, the former lawyer for 9/11 Commission, the 9/11 Commission, said, if true, it is shocking that the administration failed to heed such an overwhelming alert from the two officials in the best position to know. Suspiciously, the commissioners and the staff investigating the administration's plans, actions prior to 9/11 were never informed of this meeting. Indeed. But what's the top story on New York Times right now? Mark Foley. What's the top story in Drudge right now? Mark Foley. What does everybody want to talk about right now? Sex scandals. When there's evidence here, Bob Woodward coming out and saying the Bush administration knew 9/11 was coming, they were warned 9/11 was coming, and they chose to do absolutely nothing. Did they want 9/11? Increasingly, I'm convinced they did. Harvey in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Harvey.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm fine. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to let you know, and this requires a little more research on my part, and maybe you could look into it, too. But the first Gulf War, there was a company called Gulf Zapata, which was owned by and is still owned, I believe, by the Bush family.
Yeah, Bush
and
Senior, I believe he also owned a company called Zapata Oil Company that had oil exploration platforms off the coast of Cuba. When Operation Zapata happened, where the two ships that brought in the American soldiers were the Barbara J and the Houston, Operation Zapata, now known as the Bay of Pigs invasion.
That's correct. And but the Gulf part of it is part of Gulf Oil, and Gulf Oil had substantial holdings in Kuwait, I believe, and that was partially why I believe the first Gulf War happened, was because of the economic holdings of the Bush family.
Oh, you think Gulf, the Zapata division of Gulf Oil, was losing their Kuwait franchise to Saddam Hussein?
Well, yeah. I mean, they would have taken over.
Makes perfect sense.
Conquest of Kuwait had happened, you know, then it would have been, they would have thrown Gulf Zapata out, or they would have had to renegotiate their contracts with.
Yeah, no, they probably would have thrown it out because Hussein had nationalized all his oil. I mean, that was one of the things that so infuriated the oil industry. Amazing.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
good point.
Anyway. We'll have to look at that. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, that's worth tracking down. If you find anything more on it, Harvey, let me know. Give us a call and fill us in on what you find out. Tomorrow I'll be debating conservative Peter Schramm. What's better for the middle class, the Democrats or Republicans? David Duncan is here on toxic people. He had himself tested for 320 man-made chemicals and was shocked at the results. You will be, too. That and more in your calls right here tomorrow on the Tom Hartman Program. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.